Our theme this month in church is ancestry. And my message to you today is that while we may struggle to feel connected to our parents or family, that there is a deeper connection that can sustain us. I'd like to tell you about a movie released in 2001, set in New Jersey, called American Deshi. The word Deshi is a word that people from India use to refer to themselves. In the opening scene, a young man is leaving home to move to college. His mother blesses him by putting a red dot on his forehead and circling his face with incense. His father reminds him to kneel so that both parents can touch him on the head to receive their blessing. But when he gets out to the car, he blasts the radio and hoots and hollers about how much he cannot wait to get away from his family and his Indian heritage. When he and his friend arrive at campus and are unloading the car, as he meets people, he tells them his name is Chris. When he arrives at the door of his dormitory room, he is dismayed to see his full name posted on the door, Krishna. So he rips off the last three letters as another way to declare his name is only Chris. He is then further dismayed to see the other three names on the door of his dorm room. All Indian roommates. The first night, in an attempt to get away from his roommates, he goes to a party. He meets a girl, he flirts, and he confides his frustration that he got assigned to a bunch of Indian roommates, just like himself. Do you know what she does? She responds by speaking in Hindi, an Indian language, and walks away. And as she's walking away, he says, "But I couldn't tell that you were Indian." So I hope you see the comedy, the pain in his dilemma. In order to get the girl, he has to embrace his ancestry. As the story unfolds over the semester, his roommates forgive his initial cold shoulder and begin to teach him about Indian cooking, dancing, and movies, all of which he stubbornly had refused to learn from his family when he was growing up. And yet the movie doesn't leave us with a simplistic notion of Indian heritage. We also see nuances. The roommates are all very different from each other. In their religious beliefs, one is Muslim, one Hindu, one Rastafarian, and one couldn't care less. In their family values, one is determined only to marry a girl from India picked by his parents. One is determined to avoid an arranged marriage. And one doesn't seem interested in dating. In their vocational desires, one of the roommates wants to get a job which will please his parents. One wants a lucrative job. And one wants to pursue his artistic passion, whether it leads to a job or not. Now, our main character, as he goes along in his pursuit of the girl and learning about his own Indian culture in order to do so, encounters a rival who's also trying to get this same girl. He was born in India. And this rival insults him. What is the ultimate insult? A, B, C, D. American-born, confused Deshi. Confused, rejecting his ancestry. My friends, how many stories, movies, folk tales, legends, myths have to do with a character who is rejecting their ancestry? And how often, by the end of the story, do they come to terms with their ancestry and make sense of it? Isn't it true, on some spiritual level, we are tied to a deep spirit, which we sometimes reject or resist, and then as we mature spiritually, we come to terms with it? Although in a folktale or movie, this storyline might happen once, with plot twists and a final outcome, over the course of our lives, we need to relive again and again, coming to terms with our ancestry, whether it be our birth, our culture, or our spiritual heritage. In learning my own ancestry, I am grateful to my seventh grade history teacher, who assigned us a project to learn history by asking questions of our relatives. At that point, I learned that some of my ancestors were Protestants, called French Huguenots, whose rights were denied in France because of their religion. They left and dispersed to various other countries, and now most Huguenots are assimilated into other cultures, scattered from their homeland. Another piece of my mixed heritage are the Scottish Protestants who were relocated by the King of England in the 1600s to live in Ireland. And because they were not welcomed there by the Catholics, they left and came to the United States and were known here as Irish. But when an influx of Irish Catholics came the following century, this group renamed themselves as Scotch-Irish to make a distinction. This reminds me of the scene in the movie that I described earlier, in which a character insults another character by calling him confused about his ancestry. As far as I can tell, this kind of confusion has been going on throughout human history in many different places, in many different migrations. Confusion about our identity can be a problem if it contributes to confusion when we face difficult decisions. Sometimes, without a sense of meaning or identity, we are at risk of making decisions based on temporary pleasures or the nearest, quickest solution, even though these don't actually nourish us in the long run. Having a sense of identity is important because it can give us grounding and values. Our ancestors can represent a wisdom that comes from life experience, so that we don't have to repeat their mistakes. Perhaps this is why so many world religions teach about ancestry. In the Hebrew text, we find many lists of family trees. Here is an example, and I quote here from the Book of Chronicles, and I will be quizzing you at the end. Abraham had two sons, Isaac and Ishmael. The sons of Ishmael became the heads of 12 tribes. Nebaioth, from the name of Ishmael's oldest son, Kedar, Adbeel, Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Tema, Jator, Napish, and Kadema. Abraham had a concubine named Keturah, who bore him six sons, Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua. Jokshan had two sons, Sheba and Dedan. Midian had five sons, Ephah, Epher, Hanak, Abida, and Eldah. I think you get the point. A long list of relatives, and the list keeps going on for many pages. So here's the quiz question. Did you hear names of any women? The people who give birth? There were four times that a mother was needed to create those sons, and only one of them was named. At this point in the sermon, I could undertake a feminist critique and discuss how women have been omitted from this record of bloodline. But I think it is remarkable that the one woman named is the concubine. And we could spend some time pondering whether that is empowering to list her, along with her name, even. But I will stick to my main point, which is that this list is intended to give a tether, a tie, a rooting, a grounding. It is a way of saying, don't forget who you are. For this text is part of a story of the Hebrew people being uprooted and sent away into slavery. The list of ancestors serves as a way of saying, even though you are far away from the land where you belong, know that you are a person with history. And my friends, isn't it true? If you were a parent giving birth with no one around to be grandmother, grandfather, auntie, uncle, cousin to your child, you might find solace in this long list. So the examples I've given you so far in this sermon include slaves taken to a foreign land, religious refugees, and young men going off to college. They are separating from their families. They're exploring new identities. They are discovering the limits of these identities, what will work and what won't. Psychologists say that each of us has to do this separation, this individuation, whether we do that by going to the other side of the world, going to another town, or to a different part of the house that we grew up in. If we only had to do this once in our lives, that would be simple, wouldn't it? But often, we face changes that challenge our identities at many stages of life. Divorce, job loss, gender change, illness, discovering family secrets, facing new kinds of oppression, immigration, war, and so many more changes. These can shake us to our core so that we ask, who am I? Am I adrift? Am I utterly alone? Am I connected to anything at all? Whenever we have to rebuild a new identity or mend an old one, one way to do that would be to hold on to the pain and shut down with an ironclad protective siding. Or another way, having had our hearts broken, is to let them be broken open to new love with tenderness that is newly blossoming. Perhaps this is why so many world religions seek to remind us, to comfort us, to reassure us, no, you are not alone. So why did the Hebrew people need reminding about who they were connected to? Was it because the parents were so busy with other things that they forgot to tell their kids the family tree? Or was it because these ancient people, just like us, got busy with pursuing external things and forget what is truly sustaining? And what about us, you, me, the people here at TJMCUU? What connects us to our ancestry? Well, I'd like to tell you what a wise group of people did in 1994. They looked at the fact that this church did not have a graveyard or any place to put ashes or sit and remember our deceased loved ones. So they got organized. Yay. Yay for visionary people who work hard with dollars and dirt to make something that helps so many people today. Here is what they did. The committee believed that this congregation needed a place which would include our members who have gone before us. As they discussed many options, they tried to include symbols which feel like a place to be buried, a place where we could remember our own families. They discovered that we could not legally have a graveyard here, but we could qualify as a place to place cremated ashes. And so they created the Remembrance Garden, also called our Memorial Garden. It is right outside that wall of windows, and you can also walk to it from the social hall or the street. After considering how various faith traditions handle this need to remember deceased persons, the committee came up with four ways for us to do that here. One is a small square of space in the dirt for ashes to be placed, with the reasoning that a family can return to that particular spot. Second, a stone marker on the garden wall, with the reasoning that stone helps make the memory permanent. Third, wooden plaques indoors, and they're right on that hallway to the social hall. These wooden plaques are grouped by families with the reasoning from the Jewish tradition that prayers for loved ones who have died in our congregation are said by the family during the month that the person died. This also brings those who have gone before us a place within our church walls. And finally, we keep a memorial book in the cabinet in the foyer outside the sanctuary. Loved ones submit a page of remembrances and photos of their beloved. The reasoning is that if you were a descendant, years from now, researching your ancestor and came upon these remembrances, it would be a treasure to discover something more than obituary. It also gives us stories about our church members who have died. The garden also has a stone that simply says, "For those children lost at the dawn of life." The garden is available to members, families, and friends of the church, and I commend to you to go and spend some time there. We are coming up to the holiday time of year, a time when you might be reminded of who you were with in past holidays and feeling ache at their absence. Whether or not your loved ones have their name on the wall of the memorial garden here, it is still a place for you to go and be with your memories, to honor them, to remember the gifts and blessings given you by your ancestors. When my mother died, I called one of her neighbors, who is a minister, and I asked him to come be with us in those first moments after the change. He wisely did not say too much. But right before he left, he looked me in the eye, and since he knew me, he said, "Our parents here on earth will not always be with us, but we have an everlasting parent in God." That was good for me to hear him say. I had already figured that out for myself in various ways as an adult, in addition to hearing it with my childhood ears. But I needed his reminder in that moment. And for you listening today, you may experience comfort in that same knowledge or in a different understanding. If you're pagan, you may feel an everlasting grounding in Mother Earth, no matter what your earthly ancestors do. Perhaps you have stood on the edge of the ocean looking at the waves, the sand, pondering what all that water connects us to, where all that sand came from. Scientists have told us that the saltiness of the ocean matches the salt in our blood, and geologists have told us that the sand is made up of rock, which was once dirt and trees and other creatures just like us. Or perhaps you have stood one night looking at the stars for a long while, long enough to ponder where those stars come from and where they are going. Were they born? Are they going to die? Astronomers have told us that the matter that makes up stars is the same matter that makes up our bones. So really, we are connected to ancestors beyond naming. But does this give us comfort? Does this offer us love? Here, my friends, I think we have a choice. We can choose to believe in love and good and compassion, because they do exist in this world. And since all things are connected, we are connected to them. No matter what bumps or bruises or traumas the world has sent your way, no matter how long your healing takes, there are moments you can choose your ancestry in love. Love. Love is what the mother was trying to give her son when he left for college in the story that I told you at the beginning. She put the red dot on his forehead, and he was not ready to accept it at that time. Later, he developed an understanding so that he could. And And just in case you were wondering, what happened at the end of that movie? He finally got humble. He learned his heritage, and he got the girl.